Here is the Cannabis B News with your host, Joe Jameson.
Hello, listeners. How's it going today? This is episode CBN 031-522-2013. Last week, we didn't have any supporters, but if you feel like supporting the show, please go to cannabisbee.com/donate or anywhere on the front page at cannabisbee.com, click a donate button. Anything will help. Just trying to put together a better website, and I'm wanting to support other people who won't feel like to learn how to podcast. So if anybody out there wants to have a voice, go to the front page of cannabisbee.com and click on how to record an MP3. And you can learn a little bit about how to record your own voice. And if you feel like recording your own voice, go ahead, contact me at joe@cannabisbee.com. Let me know that you want to have a podcast or you want to be a part of a show. I want to put together a show, possibly just a few people with their own stories or their own news stories or whatever they want to talk about. So please contact me if you really want to have a voice and you really want to be heard and be put on a podcast. Either we can do a podcast for yourself, or we can compile one together with multiple people and just do a community podcast. So please, if you have any interest of learning how to podcast, please contact me, joe@cannabisbee.com, or just go to cannabisbee.com and click the Contact Us page. And let us know you want to have a voice, you want to be heard. This is a great time to start a podcast. We could be a big fish in a little pond. Just because this is brand new, marijuana, cannabis, hemp is being talked about more than it ever has. So if you want to jump on and get your own show started, please contact me. All right, let's get started with our episode today. Article number 1, cancer sufferers turn to cannabis. Yes, they are. They are. Take it away, B.
Cancer sufferer turned to cannabis. Source, Grimsby Telegraph. A lonely bachelor has been spared jail for growing and supplying cannabis to deal with sleep deprivation while he battled cancer and repay people who helped him out. William Burton, 68, of Lancaster Avenue, Grimsby, was diagnosed with prostate cancer in 2009 and spent months on chemotherapy, which left him depressed and alone. He suffered from extreme sleep deprivation. He was lucky to get a few hours of rest, and when he did, he was plagued by nightmares. Mr. Burton heard from friends that cannabis would help and turned to the drug to aid his sleep and lift his mood. But Mr. Burton, who was in the Merchant Navy for more than 30 years, is now living on benefits and found it too expensive. Virtually housebound, he started growing it for himself and others with health problems and to reward the growing number of people he was relying upon. Mr. Burton said, "When you spend all that time feeling ill and sleeping after chemotherapy, people soon stop coming round, but you need help because you're ill. A worse thing was not sleeping, so I started smoking it before I went to bed and I could actually get a full night's sleep. I wasn't making money, I would give it to other people like me who were in need and they would do the same for me." In March, police executed a drugs warrant at his house and found around 30 cannabis plants, 650 inches cash, 219 grams of skunk in bags and scales, consistent with drug dealing. Although Mr. Burton told the Grimsby Telegraph that the money belonged to a former partner who won the money at bingo. At his trial at Grimsby Crown Court, Edward Bindloss, prosecuting, said that police found messages on his mobile phone from people wanting cannabis. One read, "Have you found any green?" Mr. Burton replied, "I never find green, I grow it. Want to try?" However, Richard Butters, in his defense, said he was not the dealer of the century. He smoked cannabis for escapism and to help with his aches and pains. He was diagnosed with cancer in 2009, but medication wasn't working and he took cannabis to help him sleep, improve his mood and soothe the pain. Recorder Ewan Duff gave him a 6-month suspended sentence, which he will only serve if convicted of another crime in the next 18 months. He said, "Cancer led you into cannabis use and you made the stupid decision to grow it. Your motivation was not monetary, but to use it for yourself and supply your friends who did jobs for you. Mr. Burton now lives with a colostomy bag after surgery to remove the cancer and has since had the all clear but must have regular checkups.
Article number 2. Big Pharma's campaign to eliminate state-sanctioned cannabis contributors. Take it away.
Medical marijuana, Big Pharma's campaign to eliminate state-sanctioned cannabis competitors? Can a new loophole help medical marijuana sellers avoid high taxes? By Clarence Walker. Source, globalresearch.ca. As Colorado, California and Washington, including 16 other states, enjoy freedom under state law to operate legal medical marijuana cannabis businesses, the owners are often faced with arrests and constant harassment by Drug Enforcement Administration DEA. Though some states have legalized the sale of marijuana for medical purposes, the practice remains a felony crime under federal law. Even if marijuana operators avoid arrests, the almighty feds inflict more damage by imposing astronomical high taxes on a state-sanctioned marijuana cannabis, taxes as high as 75-80%. Some dealers, unable to pay employees and overhead, combined with the burden of extra high taxes, must shut down, thus preventing sick patients, preferring cannabis treatment, from getting the care they desperately need. Cannabis dealers argue that high taxes imposed upon their businesses is the Fed's political goal, to run them out of business, and the bigger picture is to eliminate competition against the giant pharmaceutical industry which makes billions selling drugs to treat illnesses at a higher cost. But evidence has proved that a person can purchase cannabis from a state-legalized operator and receive effective treatment at a much lower cost. With billions of dollars in the bank, the pharmaceutical companies pay millions for anti-marijuana lobbying efforts to sway Congress not to legalize marijuana under federal law. The smoking gun in this drama has raised the curtain on the pharmaceutical industry now marketing an FDA-approved cannabis medicine to undercut the growing market dominated by the states. As the battle over taxation takes center stage, a tax expert insists there is a loophole under 501c4 that, if used properly, the technique may eliminate excessive tax burdens, threatening to ruin the medical cannabis businesses. If these state legal businesses were treated as any other legal business, these industries could realize its full potential to create many, many more living wages, like retail, manufacturing and agriculture jobs that cannot be outsourced, says Betty Aldworth, a deputy director with National Cannabis Industry Association. An industry that can provide thousands of jobs is being held back by these crazy tax rates. How is this number game legally possible? Thanks to a 1982 provisional tax code known as 280E, a federal law created as a result of a drug dealer's successful attempt to reclaim his yacht, weapons and even the illegal bribes he paid off as business expenses. 280E prohibit individuals involved with selling narcotics from deducting expenses if federal income taxes are filed. Legal marijuana sellers have vigorously tried to avoid the draconian 280E law by arguing their businesses were charities promoting health benefits and should be exempt from income tax under Section 501c3. IRS lawyers bullishly oppose 501c3. Status given to state-sanctioned marijuana sellers by issuing a counterpoint argument that because of a rule called the Public Policy Doctrine. This doctrine disqualifies dispensaries as a charity because the feds say these kind of businesses exist for illegal purposes under federal law. Professor Benjamin Leff, a tax law expert at American University Washington College of Law, thinks he has a clever solution to free legit marijuana dealers from the feds' insane tax laws. I don't know if anyone has applied or not, but marijuana sellers should run their business as a social welfare organization under 501c4. To qualify under this statute, Leff said, a social welfare organization must have as its primary purpose the promotion of the common good and general welfare of the people in neighborhoods or communities. Leff wrote a compelling report on the practice that was hosted at a Harvard University seminar titled, Tax Planning for Marijuana Dealers. In an email sent to this Chronicle contributor, Professor Leff said, it occurred to me the primary obstacle to tax-exempt status for marijuana sellers under 501c3, called public policy doctrine, is that it just doesn't apply to social welfare organizations, and the basic reasoning is this: because of a provision that applies only to people trafficking in controlled substances under 280E, marijuana dispensaries are required to pay taxes not on their profits like other businesses, but pay IRS based on gross revenue after subtracting the cost of marijuana they sell. Leff further said under this theory, legal marijuana dealers have to pay more taxes than they would have if they were selling other products. And it is possible, the professor adds, a dealer would have to pay more taxes than they earn. So when taxes get too high, it's possible to drive compliant dispensaries out of business. In 2009, the global pharmaceutical market was worth an estimated $837 billion, and by 2014, the amount expected to rise at least $1 trillion. What helps to keep state-sanctioned cannabis dealers in business so far is the fact the big pharma cannot legally patent the plant that makes marijuana. Medical marijuana is often referred as the world's wonder drug, a simple substance which provides effective treatment for pain, cancer, nausea, PMS, Lyme disease, ADD and other major ailments. In a study conducted by Ryman, 66% of patients used cannabis as a substitute for prescription drugs, while 68% used cannabis as a substitute for prescription drugs to treat chronic illness. And 85% of patients reported that cannabis had fewer side effects than other prescribed medicine. Just how many other drugs are more effective? There's nothing in our current pharmacopedia that comes close, says Michael Bax, owner of the Cornerstone Research Collective, an LA, California-based medical marijuana dispensary. Political battles. Pharmaceutical industry competes with marijuana dispensaries by marketing prescription-based cannabinoid medicine. Medical marijuana activists pinpoint the giant pharmaceutical industry as a driving force in helping the feds overthrow their businesses. This theory may seem more of an overreacted imagination, but there is substantial evidence that pharmaceutical companies are aggressively marketing cannabis products, which is the backbone for marijuana dispensaries. Activists cite the fact that the cannabis they sell much cheaper to ailing patients as the reason the pharmacies are concerned this could easily cut into their high profits of selling similar conventional cures. As mentioned earlier, pharmaceutical companies has already marketed FDA-approved prescription-based cannabinoid medicines. Therefore, it doesn't take a Harvard genius to realize that state-sanctioned marijuana dispensaries are competitive. For instance, according to OpenSecrets.org, major pharmaceutical companies contributed millions of dollars during presidential and Senate races. In 2004, pharmaceutical companies contributed $16 million into federal elections amongst Democrats and Republicans. In 2011, the industry spent $150 million on lobbying in Washington, D.C. President Barack Obama received $1.2 million from the pharmaceutical industry in 2008. A triple amount when compared to funds given to John McCain. Research shows that since Obama took office, federal agents conducted more than 200 raids of medical marijuana operations nationwide. Around October 2012, the feds sent over 300 letters to landlords that dispensaries rented from, threatening property owners with criminal charges if they did not evict their tenants. Research shows that the top five special interest groups lobbying to keep marijuana illegal are police unions, private prison corporations, alcohol and beer companies, prison guard unions, and of course the pharmaceutical industry. Professor Leff outlines his strategy for marijuana sellers to possibly avoid the Fed's public policy draconian tax law. 1. Leff suggests the dispensaries employ persons who may be hard to employ, like former marijuana sellers, and provide career training and mentorship for those people. 2. Marijuana stores should operate to improve the business conditions of a distressed neighborhood. That means both are trying to bring business into a neighborhood with less retail, as well being a good neighbor to other businesses and residents. Ideally, Leff further says, marijuana sellers should partner with an existing organization that is already seeking to improve the neighborhood. 3. The second restriction may also be a big one. A 501c4 organization's social welfare cannot be owned by anyone and cannot distribute its profits to anyone. So, if you have an existing financially invested dispensary, a person needs to get legal advice to determine how to transform that investment into a type allowable for non-profits. When asked if expenses are deductible if a dispensary run a business as a caregiver, Leff points out, even without doing any of the non-profit stuff that I'm talking about, a court has held that the costs incurred by a dispensary in providing caregiving services is not subject to 280E, which denies deductions for cost incurred in selling marijuana. But a dispensary that sells marijuana and also provides caregiving services still must allocate its expenses between the two activities, and keep records sufficient to justify its allocation. So it's not the case that a dispensary providing caregiving services can deduct all of its expenses. Meanwhile, Congress Jared Polis D. Colorado and Earl Blumenauer D.O. were introduced a bill to end the federal prohibition on marijuana and allow it to be taxed. This much-needed legislation will remove marijuana from the Controlled Substance Act. Bottom line, until the tax code and the law governing federal controlled substances are firmly modified by lowering taxes and have dispensaries legally sanctioned under federal law, then the current marijuana businesses will continually face the onslaught of high taxes and possible arrests by the federal government, a tactic seemingly designed to undermine committed efforts of dealers selling legal weed to patients who use the substance to mitigate their pain and suffering.
Article number 3. How much will legal marijuana habit cost you? Take it away.
How much will a legal marijuana habit cost you? By Brad Tuttle. Source: business.time.com. If you're an average pot smoker in Colorado paying average prices for average quality marijuana, you can expect to spend around $650 on weed next year. A study conducted by the Colorado Future Center at Colorado State University aimed to get to the bottom of how much the state can expect to collect in tax revenue, now that marijuana is legal. By doing a little extra math, we can get a rough estimate for what the average marijuana enthusiast will spend annually as well. Researchers estimate that in 2014, 642,772 Colorado residents, or about 12.5% of the state population, will take advantage of pot's newly legal status. Analysts assume each person would smoke or otherwise use 3.53 ounces 100g of marijuana annually, for a total of 2,268,985 ounces, about 64,320 kilograms per year. All of these numbers may be underestimated, because they're based on data compiled when recreational marijuana was illegal. In fact, there are so many unknowns in the realm of legal non-medicinal pot that all of this math has a crude back-of-the-napkin quality to it. In any event, using the study's numbers, the average marijuana enthusiast can expect to pay a retail price of $185 per ounce next year. Multiply that times 3.53 ounces, which no one can buy at once, mind you, because there's a 1 ounce 28g purchase maximum for residents, and the total comes to $653 annually spent on pot. How much the individual actually winds up spending on marijuana will depend on several factors, most obviously the quality and price of the pot and how much one smokes. Researchers used the crowdsourcing site Price of Weed to get the $185 per ounce figure. As of early April, an ounce of marijuana was averaging $206 on the black market, and because the price is expected to drop once pot is legal, the study landed on $185. If the smoker is opting for higher quality, $300 per ounce marijuana, his annual pot bill would top $1,000. That's for someone smoking the average of 3.53 ounces per year. A heavy smoker who goes with $300 per ounce pot and uses, say, half an ounce monthly could expect to drop $1,800 annually on his habit. That may sound like a lot. But a pot smoking habit is probably cheaper than a cigarette smoking habit. Colorado is one of the cheaper states for cigarettes, but a pack still goes for around $5.19, according to one state-by-state price check compilation. So a one-pack-per-day habit purchased one pack at a time, not by the carton, comes to $1,894 for a year. Health officials say once medical expenses and things like lost productivity due to the effects of smoking are incorporated, an addiction to cigarettes is far more costly than that. For that matter, plenty of arguments have been made that legalizing marijuana will result in increased usage and addiction, as well as higher rates of driving while stoned, So the costs to society outweigh any benefits that arise from approving the drug for recreational use. Oh, and about the point of the Colorado State study, regarding tax revenue for the state? Researchers estimate that the 15% excise tax on wholesale marijuana would yield $21.7 million annually, which is far short of the $40 million annual target. To hit the target, marijuana would have to cost a lot more than the prices that have been estimated, or people in Colorado would have to buy a lot more marijuana than the forecast project. Neither is likely to occur, the study states. As competition forces growers and sellers to be more efficient, margins will erode, and both wholesale cost and retail prices are forecast to fall, the report reads. And instead of usage rising year after year, the study's authors foresee a decline in the rate of growth of consumption as the wow factor erodes over time, and any marijuana tourism begins to decline, particularly if other states follow Colorado and Washington and legalize marijuana.
Article number 4. California Senate approves bill to regulate medical marijuana shops. Take it away.
CA Senate approves bill to regulate medical marijuana shops. Source, Sacramento Bee. The California Senate passed a bill today that would shield pot shops following state guidelines for dispensing medical marijuana from prosecution for marijuana possession or sale. Senate President Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg said the goal of a Senate Bill 439 is to keep criminals out of the medical marijuana business and clarify confusion between state and federal law. Federal authorities have gone after some dispensaries in California because while they are legal under California's Proposition 215, they are forbidden under federal law. The legislature can't change federal law, but Steinberg said his bill would make clear that marijuana collectives, dispensaries and other business entities may pay employees and provide benefits as long as they comply with guidelines the Attorney General wrote in 2008. We want to create more certainty where little or none exists now, the Sacramento Democrat said as he introduced the bill on the Senate floor today. Senator Jim Nielsen, R. Gerber, argued against the bill, saying medical marijuana causes huge problems in our communities. The public thought it was for seriously ill or terminally ill individuals, he said. And now it's almost carte blanche for everybody. Steinberg said that's one of the problems his bill seeks to address. There are also a lot of concerns expressed out in our communities about there not being a fine enough line about the sale of medicinal cannabis and the sale of cannabis, period. This bill seeks to tighten it up, he said. We are, arguably, not tightened up now. An analysis of SB 439 says it is supported by the American Civil Liberties Union, Drug Policy Alliance and Sacramento Mayor Kevin Johnson, among others. It's opposed by the California Narcotics Officers Association, California Police Chiefs Association and the International Faith-Based Coalition. The bill passed the Senate on a 22-12 vote and now moves to the Assembly.
Article number 5, the booming business of hemp. Oh, it will be. Take it away, B.
The booming business of hemp. By the 420times.com. Source, via Huffington Post. American farmers are promised a new cash crop with an annual value of several hundred million dollars, all because a machine has been invented which solves a problem more than 6,000 years old. It is hemp, a crop that will not compete with other American products. Instead, it will displace imports of raw material and manufactured products produced by underpaid coolie and peasant labor, and it will provide thousands of jobs for American workers throughout the land. Popular Mechanics, Feb 1938. A mighty crop, banned from being grown in the United States for over 75 years, is making a comeback thanks to momentum in the cannabis law reform movement. Recent political advances in Colorado and Washington have led to attempts at industrial hemp legislation in several states. In fact, legislation was recently successful in the state of Kentucky. Despite being banned, a large and growing hemp industry exists in the U.S. This is because hemp is legal to import from other countries. Countries smarter than us when it comes to letting their farmers cultivate hemp. So, American companies are forced to pay other countries for their hemp, while U.S. farmers are cut out of the market. One of those American companies is Forbidden Leaf Hemp Seed Oil, based in California. If hemp were legal to grow in the U.S., we would be creating more jobs here in the U.S. and generating more money for our own country instead of giving our money to other countries, Dana Dwight, of Forbidden Leaf, told the 420 Times. The high cost of shipping would be cut out of the equation and I could lower the prices of my products for my customers. In 1619 there were must-grow laws passed in America. If you were a farmer back then and you didn't grow hemp, you would have been jailed or kicked out of the country as a non-patriot. Our government has been so hypocritical over hemp. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Billions of dollars flowing out of the U.S. when it could be going to American farmers and creating more jobs in this country. A burgeoning industry lays in wait, ready for the day that is it unleashed. Despite the handicaps, Dana has seen growth in the industry. Since I started Forbidden Leaf, I've seen tremendous growth, she said. More and more people are coming out of the so-called cannabis closet and banding together. The more people that come out to stand up for hemp, the stronger our voice will be to be heard. Strength in numbers, it's only going to get stronger as more people come out. The prospect of legalization in the future means the hemp industry has unlimited potential. If the federal government were to legalize hemp in the future, the growth for employment would rise in so many different ways, Dana told us. It would be such a great economic advantage for our own country. As of now, the U.S. is the biggest importer of hemp products in the world. Why not help our own country and grow it here and become more self-sufficient? It would benefit all of us in more ways than one. But the companies that would face direct competition from legalized hemp have spent several decades and billions of dollars making sure that industrial hemp legalization doesn't happen. But in this area, as it has been in many others, the internet is a game changer. Brainwashing was easy when there were only a few TV networks and very little information on the radio. Now billions of people share information instantly and continuously around the world. Convincing the masses that hemp is evil and harmful is quite impossible going forward. Because of that, the future is bright for the industrial hemp industry in the U.S., since hemp law reform has great momentum and, most importantly, truth on its side.
Article number 6. Colorado marijuana firms at hub of new investment network. More and more people are investing in this marijuana, cannabis, and hemp. The dominoes are falling. Take it away, B.
Colorado marijuana firms at hub of new investment network. By Steve Robb. Source, The Denver Post. Legal marijuana's sensational evolution is helping crack open a previously closed door, money to start and grow cannabis businesses. Marijuana entrepreneurs routinely are turned down for bank loans or deposit accounts and have struggled to attract financing from private investors. But thanks largely to recreational pot's new legal status in Colorado and Washington and more states approving medical marijuana, checkbooks are opening and investment partnerships are being signed. Colorado business owners are at the hub of a new national network that matches venture capitalists with budding marijuana entrepreneurs. At a recent investor conference in Seattle, two Colorado firms with money to invest listened to a pitch from a third local business seeking growth capital. The common ingredient, they sell cannabis products or provide services to the industry. Finding funds to grow has been a struggle, said Dan Williams, president of Denver-based Canna Security America, a firm that installs security systems at marijuana dispensaries and at grow operations. Williams and his employees never touched cannabis-only electronics yet until last month, they had been shut out of traditional sources of financing. Williams didn't even bother applying for a bank loan when he started the business in 2009. Banks typically fear regulatory repercussions because of marijuana's still illegal status under federal law. We were a zero-capital startup, Williams said. We would do a job so that we could go buy a ladder. Then we would do another job so we could buy business cards. Earlier this year, Canna Security moved its headquarters from Williams' basement to commercial office space in northwest Denver. The company is preparing to launch operations in Washington and several states with recently enacted medical marijuana laws. Williams projects that his staff of five could grow to more than 30 in the next 2 years. Instrumental in the growth plans was a recent equity investment from Denver-based marijuana entrepreneur Trip Keber. He is the owner of Dixie Elixirs, a wholesaler of pot-infused foods and beverages. Keber watched earlier this year as Canna security officials pitched their company at the ArcView Investor Network conference in Seattle. Liking what he saw, Keber invested an undisclosed amount in the firm. Dixie Elixirs is fast-growing and successful with annual sales of more than $3 million, but Keber knows the struggles of trying to start and expand a cannabis-related business. "I couldn't go to Wells Fargo and get a business loan," he said, "instead using personal funds from non-marijuana business ventures and not drawing a paycheck for 2 years. But Keber sees such strong growth potential in both his own enterprise and other marijuana businesses that he became an investor member of ArcView, a San Francisco-based network that helps link investors with marijuana-related companies seeking funding. "People are realizing that this is the next great American industry," said Troy Dayton, co-founder and CEO of ArcView. But even recently, the outlook was not so positive. ArcView was founded in November 2011. Shortly thereafter, federal agents launched a series of raids on California medical marijuana dispensaries. "They had a chilling effect on investment in the industry," Dayton said. ArcView last year decided to schedule a networking meeting in Denver on November 7, the day after Colorado voters were determining the fate of Amendment 64. "Either we were going to commiserate together or celebrate together," Dayton said. "Before Amendment 64's passage, we looked like an industry contracting. Now the energy is palpable." ArcView earlier this month announced its first investments, up to $2 million split among five companies, including Canna Security. Another Colorado firm, MJ Freeway, has been on both sides of the investment spectrum, first pitching to investors for growth capital, and now is an investor member of ArcView. The firm provides software to businesses for tracking every gram of marijuana from cultivation facility to retail sale. It also helps companies maintain compliance with state regulations. "It was not easy at all to get started," said co-founder Jessica Bibblingsley. "We were bootstrapped, self-funded. There were a number of times when we had to double down on our investment." Like Canna Security, MJ Freeway has no physical contact with marijuana. "We thought that as software providers, we wouldn't face this degree of financing challenges," said co-founder Amy Poinsett. But now, after 3 years of operations, MJ Freeway is profitable and growing, with hundreds of clients in 12 states, Washington, D.C., and Canada. Its 2013 revenue is projected at between $1 million and $2 million. The partners last year had attended ArcView meetings to raise money. This year, they're sitting on the other side of the table as prospective investors. Although they haven't yet invested, they discovered two pitching companies that could be candidates for investment or creation of joint ventures. Investors say they are pleased that the marijuana industry is moving from niche status to the economic mainstream. "When you invest in cannabis," Keber said, "you invest in America." Read more, Colorado marijuana firms at Hub of New Investment Network, The Denver Post, www.denverpost.com web link. Read the Denver Post's terms of use of its content, www.denverpost.com web link. Follow us at Denver Post on Twitter, Denver Post on Facebook.
Thanks, that's all I have for this week. Now remember, if you feel like having a voice and being a part of a podcast or start your own podcast, please contact me at the email address joe@cannabisbee.com or go to cannabisbee.com, click on the Contact Us page. Please, let's get some more voices out here. Let's get this network rolling. All right, till next week, y'all have a good day, good night, good week. Bye-bye.
We pollinated your minds. Now, go pollinate the world.